Welcome to All About Art. My name is Alexandra, and I'm an art historian, curator, and writer. Within this podcast, topics relating to art history, cultural policy, the art sector, as well as a large range of other art-related topics will be covered. Conducting critical discussions, having entertaining exchanges, or just enjoying some relaxing chats? All About Art is where you'll find it all. Join me in exploring and developing cultural discourse. Welcome to another episode of All About Art. This is a special bonus episode in collaboration with Kravitz Contemporary. I had the wonderful opportunity to host a live panel discussion for the occasion of the two-person exhibition titled Window Shopper at the gallery in Soho Square in London. This is a live and uncut recording of the panel talk where we speak about the exhibition, the artists' respective practices, the curation of the show, being a woman in the arts, along with the struggles and benefits of coming from an international background. You can find the links to the artists, curator, and contributing galleries in the show notes. I hope you enjoy. All right, welcome everybody. Thank you so much for coming this evening. For those who don't know me, I am Alexandra. I'm an art historian and the founder and host of the All About Art podcast. I'm here tonight to host this panel discussion with artists Suwon Lee, Małgorzata Widomska, who are currently exhibiting their work in this exhibition here at Kravitz Contemporary, curated by Elaine Tam, also joining us on the panel this evening. Just to add, we will be taking audience questions at the end, and that's when we can open up for discussion. I would love it if each panelist could introduce themselves just briefly, a little bit about them and their work, and then I will dive in with my first question.
Do I need to put the mic close?
No, okay. It should hopefully pick you up.
All right. So hi, my name is Suwon Lee. I'm a Venezuelan, Korean-Venezuelan artist. I'm currently living in Madrid. I work through different media, predominantly with photography, which you can see here today. And this is my first duo show here in London, so I'm really happy to be here. Thank you for coming.
Hello, my name is Małgorzata Widomska, and I am Polish artist living in Poland. And also, this is my first solo show here in London, not whole duo show, and I even haven't any solo show here. So, I'm a painter, you can see my painting here.
Wonderful.
Hi, I'm Elaine. I work in a curatorial capacity at a London-based gallery called White Cube. Alongside those kinds of activities, I also independently curate, as you can see, and I write text and edit publications. It has been an absolute pleasure to be able to work with Suwon and Gosha.
All right, thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
So my first question I want to direct to Suwon and Małgorzata, because I would love to briefly go into further depth about the work that you produced that is on view in this exhibition. So Suwon, I'd like to start with you. In your work, we as the viewers were presented with alternative views of South American cities, mm-hmm. and you refer to these as anti-clichés. Could you tell me more about your reinterpretation of these Latin American landscapes and what that means to you?
Sure. So this series, I took them in 2011, so 12 years ago. And I was traveling a lot in Latin America, and I was trying to capture and document these scenes that I did not see represented in art in Venezuela and elsewhere. So I started with my own city of Caracas. That photo you see over there is taken in Caracas. And Caracas is a very exuberant, lush place, you know, with a majestic mountain as a backdrop. And this is the image we all have of Caracas, of this city. And what I did was I placed myself in this mountain and I reverted this view into the city itself, and what I portray is actually the largest slum in Venezuela, which is Petare. It's a very dangerous place, and it's not the most representative view and scene of my country. So in this photo, this is a photo of the city of Maracay, which is 1 hour away from Caracas. And it's actually taken in a very narrow road on the way to a popular beach town that a lot of us would go to. And it's a very difficult place to stop. There's not like a, you know, like a place to admire the scene.
It's not like a ledge or anything like that.
Like
you have to just
rush because there's like buses coming and everyone's like hurrying you, and it's kind of dangerous. You know, it's a very narrow, winding road. And but again, like my, I had this desire every time I drove past this area to capture the scene, to slow down and to really portray this image for everyone that couldn't do it. So I was able to finally do it one afternoon, and it has a special meaning for me because I grew up in this city till I was 7. But again, you know, I'm not portraying the beach town, which is where everyone wants to go, and it's a very tropical, colorful scene. You know, I'm portraying this city, and this series portrays all these different cities at sundown, you know, just when the sun has set and the lights of the city are lighting up. So it's a very special moment light-wise, right? So I'm like more interested in the atmosphere that's created in these in-between moments. And they're also very anonymous. They're not like your most representative scenes, as I said before. And the next photo is a photo of Sao Paulo, taken from an iconic building called the Copan Building by an important architect from Brazil, Oscar Niemeyer. So again, I'm turning myself, my back to the building, it's to the most iconic representation of the city, into the city itself. And what I'm trying to do here is, first of all, I'm trying to document all these places, you know, from, you know, the gaze of a woman artist, you know, daughter of migrants who's traveling and, you know, in these contemporary times. I'm trying to distance myself as well from the tradition of Venezuelan painting, you know, that was started, let's say, in the 1800s by German travelers who try to capture the light of Venezuela. And I'm trying to do it in my own way, trying to represent new perspectives and new perceptions of places, you know, to offer this new gaze of, you know, what it means to be somewhere and what is important, you know, in the landscape. So that's a bit about.
Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah, the tying into that anti-cliché, it's not the popular beach, it's the way there. It's the view
exactly.
On the way.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, it's not the postcard image. It's it's not the obvious image that everyone wants to buy. You know, it's just like those moments that are fleeting and that are, you know, sometimes overlooked.
Yeah.
Yes, that's what I'm trying to capture.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And Magorzata, in your work, abstract compositions are reminiscent of the structures of windows. This is something that I think a lot of people here have noticed. I was overhearing some conversations in the room earlier about people talking about that. And we can also view them as portals into your memories, into your thoughts, your feelings. Can you tell me about your process of making, deciding on how you embody these memories?
Of course, yes. Thinking about windows and photographs, it wasn't my aim to, you know, recall them as a fact. But of course, there are windows and portals in paintings, in every painting. Yes, every painting is kind of a window or portal. It's how we understand during the history of art paintings. So yes, I of course I know that they are present, but if you noticed, I gave the titles to both paintings, and I think that they are the themes of them. I think that what's most important is that paintings is like looking somewhere deeper, somewhere further, somewhere beyond of yourself. Mm-hmm. But I want to stress myself in those ages, in those structures. Yes, so maybe you've noticed that I really care about margins of the painting.
Yeah.
And this is the place where I express myself. So I would say that maybe paintings are more like monads with windows, you know, after like anti-Leibniz theory, yes? So you have anti-cliché, anti-cliché, anti-Leibniz. So yes, I believe that monads can have windows. So maybe. Your question was about what triggered me to
yeah, your process of making and how you decide to embody the memory that you bring into your works.
Yeah, the memories appears during the process.
Yeah.
I am simply searching for the things that stop me. But stop me in that special way that I know that it's important. No, interesting, not, you know, for everyone, important just for me, yes. And then I think, I'm really multi-sensitive. So when I'm thinking about painting, I think about the tactical facilities, about the smell, about how they look like. And when I'm searching my... let's say sketches, which are taken by photos mostly, like a closing up of some structure or some wall, some I don't know sky. I collect them and I browse them and I try to find what is beyond of my interest. Yes, and because I believe that when I feel that kind of moving, there's something behind it, something really important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And thinking about some of your titles, do you reference sometimes childhood memories or family?
Yes, of course, child memories, because, you know, I refer mostly to the primary memory. Mm-hmm. And, primary, it's the time of the childhood, yes.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, this is the time when your judge is suspended, but you can say what's good, what's wrong. You're just watching. You are just curious then, yes? So, yes, I want to touch this world like something totally good.
Yeah.
Yes, totally good, yes. I try to get well myself with the world. I try to overcome bad memories.
So almost a bit of catharsis through painting,
yes,
in
yes,
a way.
Yes, I'm going to be free thanks to my painting.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
So my next question is looking at bringing together the works of these two artists. So Elaine, as the curator of the exhibition, I would love to speak about the title, which references the window as a literal, but also as a metaphorical device. But it also emphasizes this tension and this feeling associated with being a window shopper. And there was a question that I loved discovering when I was reading up on this exhibition. And it was, what does it mean to behold but not to hold? Possibly keeping a safe distance or maybe a mournful separation. And I would love to hear more about that. And then just one like sub question to that. How do you think the viewer is turned into a window shopper?
I mean, before I launch into the curatorial premise for this duo show, I'd love to invite Gosha to speak a little bit about the Hannah Segal.
Yeah.
Because I thought that was quite pertinent, like right before we started giving this talk, and I thought that would be also an interesting gateway
You want me to speak now?
Yes.
tell me what you told me earlier about the Hannah Segal reference.
Yeah, I read her writings and I was moved by that kind of theory that there is a missing and mournful space in the place where we lost our memories, when we, this is a place where picture are burping.
Mm-hmm. Coming. Yes.
Coming. Yeah.
Yes.
Because we need to restore it. We need to restore our separation from ourselves, our lives, our history. And we can't stand these gaps in our, you know, feeling. So Hannah Segal noticed that paintings, pictures are coming into that space because most people think from images, yes, most people think from images. Mm-hmm. It's how writing starts with images, yes. So she was a psychologist and she was connected with Alain Klein, and Alain Klein was connected with Sigmund Freud. So everything is about psychoanalysis. Yes.
All comes back to that.
It's really complicated, but shortly, yes.
Yes. Like yeah, that was brilliant because I think that really touches upon a lot of themes and thoughts pertaining to this show. Because as you can see, I mean, this show is about images in the loosest kind of sense. It's not necessarily only about the photographic image, but also about how the image plays a role in memory formation. So that's also the absent image, or the image that occupies that negative space that Gosia just described, or how the image from a different vantage point has an effect on perceiving. And so, I mean, as we all know, like, you know, windows are exactly that kind of structuring device. And as you spoke about earlier, windows have a very prominent place in art historical painting, even prior to the inception or invention, if you will, of photography. And I was reading this text by Jacques Rancière, where he was speaking about the implication of the framing device insofar as it transformed the maybe aristocrat that you see through the window as a kind of a diorama. How do the better half live? Which I think is quite interesting in relation to Suwan's work. How do the better half live? This kind of, you know, picturesque, if you will, view of something that one aspires to, perhaps. And conversely, he also says that the window also transformed the ordinary person into an object of love. We look at so many history paintings of absolutely ordinary people going about their daily business, doing things, head down, focused on their work, in the kitchen, cooking, doing completely banal things. And that really has to do with, as John Berger would say, a way of seeing. And so I wanted to kind of bring that intimation to the show insofar as, you know, we have two wonderful artists here who are dealing with different mediums, and the idea of a structuring device in a completely different kind of way. And you know, the immediacy, that kind of question of immediacy, that question of contact. And that's where the figure of the window shopper appears. We have the immediacy of the photograph, but as we know, the photograph is something that also separates us from a memory in a way. It brings us into contact with it, but it can't be relived in its immediate form. And in many ways, Gosia does something similar, that there's so much presentness and sensuality invoking that kind of memory, but perhaps it's nothing we can relive again.
Yeah. So to behold, but no longer to hold.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I hope that wasn't too much of a digression, but to give you a sense of what's happening here. Yeah.
No, thank you so much. I would love to open up the discussion to all of us here on the panel to the themes that we wanted to touch on tonight. But I appreciate, you know, we really wanted to talk about the show and about your work. And it is incredibly important as a premise to the themes that we're going to touch on. Starting with the impact of different backgrounds when practicing in the arts. So how do you feel coming from an international background bleeds into your practice, if at all, both artistically or curatorially? Whoever wants to start, whoever has an opinion,
It doesn't have to go in the order.
You don't have to go counterclockwise.
Well, I can start with that. Yes, I've always, you know, had this internationalness about me because I was born the daughter of migrants, Korean migrants in Venezuela. So I was always the foreigner. And I still am, you know, I go back to Korea and it's not really like I belong there. I don't belong really anywhere. And that's accompanied me all through my life. And when I was younger, of course, it was an issue. And now I've just, you know, grown accustomed to it. And my artistic practice is mostly a desire to communicate this feeling of, you know, foreignness, and it's always permeated. You know, when I started doing art, I started doing self-portraits because I wanted to know who I am. And I found in art that I could communicate, you know, this desire to know myself. So yes, for me, it's like an integral part of my art and who I am. And yes, it's I think it's a very contemporary condition. We're all traveling. Many of us have been, you know, migrants during different periods of our lives, and it's a human condition. You know, we've always been moving around throughout the history of humanity, and having to adjust to new cultures or becoming, you know, foreigners in a new land is our condition. So I try to find truth in all of this and through art. I think art is the ideal tool to be able to materialize all these questions that I've had since I've been a kid, basically. So.
I mean, if I may respond to what Suwon just said, what I find interesting is your relationship, what you describe as essentially an extimate relationship. So not necessarily intimate, but an extimate, feeling that kind of intimacy, mm-hmm. but also being outside of it at the same time. And that kind of idea of displacement and how you spoke about your relationship to the city against a kind of postcard genericism.
Right.
Does have a very, there's like a tacit agreement between that experience, that personal experience of yours, and the way you perceive or create work.
Yes. I in a way, this trying to, you know, offer new views, you know, that are not the conventional ones, mm-hmm. are a sort of autobiographical or a self-portrait sort of way of communicating this foreignness.
And you were saying earlier that you were creating portraiture, like self-portraiture, in a kind of like of yourself, right?
Yes.
And Goja told me something really interesting about portraiture earlier. It's fascinating to me that both of you have in some capacity worked with mm-hmm. portraiture, but of course, you know, looking at the works around us, it's not as literal or as palpable. So I wanted to invite maybe both of you to respond to this idea of, like, you know, how did you make the transition mm-hmm. from portraiture to the work we see here?
I didn't know you did figurative. You can talk to us about that.
I have already mentioned that I am here in the trages, ages. Yes, ages, brokenness. Mm-hmm. So this is the kind of my rest of, you know, when you see something, you can see also
the periphery,
of your own body. So I'm thinking about myself and I'm thinking about mood and how I struggle with the theme of the painting. So this is a self-portrait, but I'm doing traditional self-portrait also, especially when I have a kind of mental breakdown. Yeah, then I have to do something like that because, you know, I look in the mirror and I try to recall myself, who am I? Yes, so this is also very important to me. And just after my study, I was really interested in the portrait and what I was portraying a lot of people. And I think that I was quite good as a portraitist. Portrait, mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. But then I noticed that there's something that is attached to that portrait, like a cliche, like a story from something else, like a film, or I don't know, some stories. Yes, visual stories. Then I decided to reduce the portrait to an abstraction. And there are many of my paintings, abstract paintings, are portraits indeed. So it's how it works. And speaking about my limited background, yes, because as I mentioned, I live in Poland and I was born there and I grew up there. I am a mother of two children in autistic spectrum, so I'm not moving a lot, yes, because now they are teenagers, so it's going to be easier, but it used to be very hard to move anywhere, yes. So my world, my physical world was very limited, but I am a mental traveler, yes, and I can travel everywhere in my head. And also, speaking about art history, art references, I travel a lot, yes. I'm not a typical Polish painter. During the time I graduated, there was a celebration of critical art in Poland. And then I understood that reflection is something different to being a critic. Yes, because you reflection is something what you are doing with others, and critic is something what you are doing against others. And I decided to be a reflective artist. So that was my own way out of all fashion. So
what was fashionable?
Yeah, it wasn't fashionable. So mm-hmm. I waited really long time to be discovered. Maybe I am now, you know. I'm starting point as a painter. Yes, maybe not technologically, but in the art world, mm-hmm. I am on a starting point.
Okay. And you mentioned something because you said that you felt that you had almost a limited physical way of traveling because you haven't really lived outside of Poland and you're there with your two children. Mm-hmm. If I may then just, I guess, point out that I think that it's, as coming from a varied background myself and also similar to Suwon, never really feeling at home, mm-hmm. I think that there is something incredibly special to feel at home and to feel like you might belong or to feel like you know somewhere better than I think I could possibly ever know somewhere because of the way that I grew up. And I think that that might have an incredible impact and an incredible, you know, we were talking about intimacy earlier with a place. Mm-hmm. And I think that's almost also contributing to a flip side of feeling that intimacy with somewhere. I wanted to ask, how do you think that art, or curating for that matter as well, can be a vehicle to open up intercultural conversations with, for example, with viewers who possibly may not know much about other countries or cultures? This is to anyone, of course, who wants to answer.
A line.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, like, I suppose insofar as we've touched upon, I mean, the situatedness of you know, of Suwon and Goja's practice, the fact that, you know, these kinds of the impulse to create very frequently might alight from something autobiographical, not in a descriptive sense by any means, but that there's a kind of impulse that very much has to do with that, where viewers or viewers of the work of arts are concerned, there is also exactly that type of situatedness. So it's kind of the meeting of two things always, and I suppose that's why the premise for this show being Window Shopper is really about drawing into question or having the viewer question their situatedness in relation to the works, mm-hmm. and hence this kind of almost like performative positioning, mm-hmm. which you can kind of sense in the exhibition text. And so, I mean, I guess to answer your question, I think that kind of the exhibition space as a kind of context space, as a way and means of engaging with other people's work, I mean, that's where the magic happens. That's it. That's the interface. And everything from there is like open.
Yeah, I agree. I think art has this amazing power to connect people through space and time. We can connect with the past, and people from the past will connect to the future.
Yeah,
the time capsule machine, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I think that's why we're all here, because we believe in this incredible power of art. And I think connecting with people through my art is such a radical thing. And I love it when people just write to me out of nowhere. You know, recently I've been getting messages from very young people through Instagram and just telling me how they relate to my work, you know, because as you mentioned earlier, I started doing self-portraits, and I've, you know, delved into the more exterior world through my landscapes, but always looking in and also trying to portray this idea of, you know, identity and all these internal processes, you know, that we all go through, emotional processes. And I find people connecting with that, and I find that really touching and very radical. It's like connecting with people, I think it's a radical act. And there was a catchphrase in the 2007 Venice Biennale that it's always stuck with me. It's there are no foreigners in art. And that really, I think, sums everything up, right? Because I think in art, we belong. And I try to, you know, communicate something, and there's this special magic that happens with some stranger in another part of the world. And, you know, this magic happens, and there's no barriers anymore. And this is why we're here, and this is why we love art, and this is what we do, right? So.
Right, I feel like we can just end it there now. That was a joke. We're not going to end it here. If anyone has anything like to else to say to this question.
I love your questions, Alexander.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for this.
Absolutely. Well, if I may, then I'll move on to the next question, which is moving away from this question of internationality or intercultural aspect, and more, I'm going to direct this to Suwon and Magorzata, working as mid-career female artists. That's kind of the label that we're dealing with right now. Because something that I'm interested in talking about is women's representation in the arts. And just to make this clear, that this is still a really prevalent obstacle in the sector, an article published in Forbes in 2022 stated a lot of different statistics about the massive gap that there still is when it comes to gender in the arts. Mm-hmm. And so I just wanted to preface this question by quoting the article. So, using a sample of 1.9 million auction transactions from 1970 to 2016 for nearly 70,000 individual artists, researchers found that works by female artists sell for 42% less than works by male artists, for example. another stat in the article, and this one gets me every time, is that when a man signs a work of art, it increases in value compared to when it isn't signed. However, when a woman signs it, it decreases in value.
How do they measure this?
I mean, like, I can send you the link to the article. They go into kind of a little bit of detail of how they how they looked at, you know, I mean, looking at that, you know, 1.9 million auction transactions, and you can see patterns, and obviously using probably a lot of So in this vein, what are some of the struggles that you've contended with as women artists in the sector so far in your career? It will get more positive later on, I promise. But I want to talk about the problems first.
Well, yeah, gender is one. Race, cultural background, you know, your status, my status as a migrant. I've moved countries in the last 7 years. I've moved continents and countries 3 times. So every time that happens, you know, you start from scratch, you know, you have to make new relationships wherever you move.
Yeah.
It's challenging, of course, and it's not an easy thing as a, you know, a woman in her mid-40s. And it's not easy, let me tell you that. And I come from, I'm a minority of a minority because I'm Asian, but I'm also Latin. So like when I go to Korea, I'm like Kyopo. It's like Kyopo is like the foreign born Koreans, right? But I'm not born in like one of the, you know, European or American countries. I'm the Latin Kyopo, you know, so.
So being a woman, it's not your first problem.
One of many problems.
I love being a woman. I love being challenges. And, you know, being middle-aged, you know, well, I think we'll go into, you know, the mid-career thing later on in your questions.
I mean, that's my next question, so we can combine it, because I still want to hear about your guys' perspectives.
Yes. But
also touching on the subject of being mid-career, do we think that that's a term that is gendered? Do we think that it's a term, like, how do we feel using it
mid-career?
Using the term mid-career, do we feel like it's not gendered? How do we feel using it as practitioners? That would be interesting to discuss.
Career is something totally new to me. So I really started to regularly exhibit it 2 years ago, because I've got some success just after I studied and just after I did my PhD, but then I focused on my family, and for me, this is the most important thing, but of course, I can't keep my relationship with my children if I can't keep the relationship with myself, which I'm doing for the painting. So I was working in the studio very hard, but I wasn't struggle to exhibit, to being in touch, to have, you know, lots of friends in the art world, because there is no place. So
in Poland, you mean? Sorry.
No, in Poland. I think that this situation happens, yes, in every country. Yeah, you've got 2 children with diagnosis of autism, and you have to concentrate on raising them up.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So that was most important. But of course, as I said, I have to be in touch with myself, so this is a connection, yes?
Yeah.
So I really was working hard during that time. In Poland, there is more and more people, more and more women are having kind of art career now. Yes, it's really good, I think. But I've got an impression that they are not treated as a big artist, but more like a suppliers of you know, some goods, some objects that
like
desired objects.
Yeah.
So there's always a desire in the background. So I hate when art is an object and when people are objects. Yes, I hate that situation. Yeah. So maybe I'm going to finish on that.
Yeah, so, I mean, touching on themes of migration and of race, as well as of motherhood and objectification, I mean, these are all incredibly important topics to be discussing
yeah.
within this context of
yeah,
being
of
a woman in not only in the arts, but just in the world.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I mean, on a more practical or more pragmatic note, I feel like, you know, I mean, much like Gosia described, it's like, you know, what does this idea of mid-career mean in the sense that at what age are you meant to be mid-career? Because
yeah.
you could, like, at whatever age you could be established or emerging or however you put it. But because I feel like there are these, like, misnomers about it, you end up falling into a gap, for instance, funding gaps, or, for instance, you know,
yeah.
it's predicated on time, right?
Absolutely.
How are you meant to appear or identify? Where are you meant to be by when? And as we all know, artists very much love to make work, and it's a lifelong thing. So it's like, you know, if you start at the age of 80, it's like, are you an emerging artist, but you don't get funding the way people graduating from their bachelor's degree in fine arts do? And, you know, where, how about all these outliers?
Yeah,
it's like, you don't get the support. And
mm-hmm.
it's,
yeah.
and, you know, so it's a complex one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually looked it up before, you know, coming here. Like, what's middle age?
what's the bracket? Google. What's the definition
like
here?
35 to 45. That's what they consider, because if you don't perform a certain way when you're middle age, you know, you don't get the same benefits, whatever. But, you know, when you hear middle age or mid-career, you know, it always comes with mid-career survey, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So more than a gender term, I think it also comes with, you know, where you're coming from and what your opportunities are, again, you know.
Yes, yes.
And myself coming from, you know, this country, it's Venezuela, you know, where we've been stripped of our rights to our cultural institutions because the museums have basically been demolished by this current regime. We have no opportunities to have a mid-career survey, let's say. And as a migrant artist living in Madrid, you know, it's difficult to, you know, enter the circuit there because of my condition. You know, there are many more people who have been living there and making their career there who have priorities, and that's totally understandable. But at the same time, you know, there's an amazing opportunity like the one I'm having right now, thanks to a Venezuelan collector who donated many of, you know, works from her collection to the Museum of Modern Art, who are, you know, she's trying to push the careers of many Latin American artists who would never have entered that collection, or, you know, it would have been much more difficult, you know, myself included. So, I mean, we live in, like, all these difficult situations and, you know,
complicated.
It's a very complicated world.
Yeah.
As an artist, you know, it's, yeah, it's not an easy path. But there are cracks where we can.
Yeah, I've got two icons, Louise Bourgeois and Carmen Herrera.
Mm.
And
yes,
I like when I think about one of them.
Yes.
Yeah. When I'm thinking that it's too late for something.
Yeah.
Never.
Yes, it's never too late.
Exactly. Yes. One of my favorite artists to come out, female artists to come out from Venezuela, Gego.
Mm-hmm.
She started making art at 40.
Mm.
Oh, okay.
And now she's.
And Agnes Martin also.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
After 30.
Yeah.
So please.
So let's not put pressure on ourselves because of age. Let's just.
Yeah.
In the interest of time, I'm kind of going to combine my next two questions. To speak about something kind of more positive as well in the light of feminism and equality in the arts, I wanted to ask you, it's again, I'm going to combine the two. So how can we as women uplift one another and ensure that we're being inclusive and thoughtful in our approaches? And also, where is it that you have found community or solace as a woman in the arts?
Well, I can say that I found solace in the artists that I work with, the curators that help me with text, the people who approach me, the opportunities by friends who have introduced me, my friend Carol have introduced me to Sarah, the gallerist here. Mm-hmm. You know, we're all women working together to make meaningful work, and I really appreciate that. And I'm constantly, you know, approached, and I'm so thankful for the help along the way, because we're trying to, you know, push each other in the right direction and to strengthen ourselves. So for me, it's a total privilege to be able to share my work and to support each other. I think, yeah, with other women artists and other artists who are not women as well, you know.
Of course, yeah,
yes,
of course.
The arts, you know, the artists, the curators, people in the art world who are open and sensitive, and
yeah.
They don't want just something from you. They just want to, you know, make meaning, create meaning together.
Yeah.
You know, this is where the magic is. You know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also trying to be surrounded by the people that help me feel a community. The most challenging moment during my so-called art career was when I achieved something in my studio and I knew that it was good, but no one wanted to acknowledge it. So I, you know, I exhibit some shots through Instagram, with any hope. And then what happens, few of female artists lectured at artists in Academy of Fine Art. They touched, yes, they called to me and they said me that it's great. Yeah, and they asked me if they can come to my studio. There were women, mm-hmm. Yes. I am really thankful to them. And we didn't know each other earlier. Yes. So yeah. This was a moment that gave me the strength to fight. Nowadays, for example, I am a co-founder of a kind of community we call Chapter Other Society, and we started to meet just after pandemic, on mm-hmm. a day when Russia invaded Ukraine, and because we felt that this is something very important to be with others in that situation and to share our feelings. And it was a moment that I was so missing speaking about art, just after pandemic, because my husband is an engineer, yes, and he doesn't understand art, I think, but it's a wonderful person who I love. Who I love. I was missing them during that pandemic, you know, comes down this kind of relation about art issues. And we started meeting each other, and there are six members of our society, four of them are women. Every of them has got two child.
Yeah.
Two of them are men, and they haven't any child. Very, yes. So I'm finding great support in that relation. Yeah, we are doing a lot of things. So.
Yeah. I think thinking about like organizations or like things like that are also so incredibly rewarding to have or be a part of. I mean, I know of so many also here in London that personally I'm part of one, and that has been such a solace as well during COVID, during like we did online events, but then after things opened up and meeting people, speaking to people,
yeah.
like-minded people who you feel like you can really connect with on things that you might be missing.
Yeah.
I think that that's so incredibly rewarding and like, yeah. Yeah, thinking about exchanging ideas.
We wanted just to support each other, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so it's all,
yeah.
There's
absolutely.
No, you know, hidden, you know, interest.
Like hidden, yeah, exactly. It's just about sharing
yeah.
and speaking
yeah.
and
yeah.
being
yeah.
heard and also listening and having that exchange.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think curatorially, like just in a really practical sense, like redressing balance or having awareness of like balance and inequality is like super important because
yeah.
visibility for artists, female artists, but also queer or, you know, non-gender conforming artists is super important. And it's really as simple as like any kind of curator looking at the list of people that they've invited and like, you know, ensuring that there's equal,
that there's balance,
that
yeah.
there's representation.
Absolutely.
There. But also, I mean, In a personal sense, it's like I'm personally much more willing to do pro bono work or
yeah.
offer advice or help to female or queer artists exactly for that reason that you, I mean, you cited the Forbes article, right?
Yes. Yeah.
About how female or maybe queer artists perhaps make or not perhaps in fact make a lot less money.
Yeah.
The male artists.
Yeah.
And so it's really about those practical things, how we can mutually support each other.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I'm going to ask my final question and then we can open it up to questions from the audience. I would love to touch on the subject of the arts sector and its reputation as a field to pursue a career in. How can we as artists and curators and podcasters, encourage the next generation of international women artists to excel in the sector? Or maybe to kind of contextualize that question a little bit more to understand where I'm coming from is, what is something that you wish you had more of when you were starting out your career, or something that you were thankful for that we might want to give to the newer generations coming into the sector?
So I can start. I was very lucky to be able to run an artist-run space in Caracas when I was beginning my career. And this was without the pressure of having to pay rent. And we did that for 2 or 3 years, I believe. And that gave us the space to develop our project. And we began showing the work of many emerging artists at the time. And we grew together. So for me, that was like a huge experience and a huge privilege that I'm really thankful for and that I see not many people have, you know. And I think these opportunities to create your own space and platform are necessary. And many times people don't get that, you know, that confidence
mm-hmm.
that, you know, from galleries, because galleries want to work with people who are already have made their careers, you know, but then it's like a vicious circle, because how do you start unless somebody really, like, you know, trusts in your potential? So for me, that was like a huge learning experience, and I really appreciate that, starting my career like that, and I was really lucky. And I hope, you know, this can be the case for many other artists, but sometimes it's easier than in other cases, so that's just my reflections.
I wish that art world would give artists more time to develop. And the second thing, what I wish is to support mothers. And I can see here Magda. Maybe you can tell us about your scholarship. Yes, here.
Yes, I'm call for a gathering on the residency stay with my family. And it's really good to be with family, with my son.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Just to note, I did a podcast episode with Kupfer Gallery, and she talked about motherhood, and she talked about the importance of supporting mothers and this whole entire everything that they believe in.
Mm-hmm.
So for anyone who wants to look into that more,
okay,
they're putting their money
yes.
where their mouth is and really doing something about
great.
It. So that's amazing. Yeah,
so,
Kupfer's great.
Yeah. And I think what you're doing is great also. And in Poland, we have Agnieszka Rejzacher from Local 30, and she's also a person who supports women very much.
Yeah.
And she organized a feminist seminary from it last 8 years. And I don't know how many have been done till that time, but about 4 per week. So
that's a lot.
That's a lot.
Yes.
Yeah. Not per week, per years.
Oh,
not per week.
Yeah,
not
per week.
That's a lot. Yeah,
yeah.
Your reaction was strange.
Something's not right.
I made a mistake. Yeah.
All right. Well, then I guess we're going to open up the floor to some questions up front.
Thank you. My question is directed to Elaine. As a curator, when you work with different artists, such as here, these two different approaches to art, do you look more around the similarities or the differences between the artists, or the balance of the two when you work through the curation itself?
Ooh, that's a really good question.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if you guys have ever gone to like a group show and everything looks the same. And you're like, I'm
yes.
not sure what I meant to get out of this. Because I find like too much, I like to celebrate difference. And I find that too much similarity can have like, you know, a flattening effect. I mean, and it depends, of course it depends on like, it's situation dependent. But I find that oftentimes there's kind of a more evident dynamism or dynamic conversation by pairing unlikely artists.
Yeah.
As we spoke before, like this particular show is about ambivalence. It's about tension. It's about apprehension and the inability to apprehend something. And it's nice to have two artists working in very different ways, in very different mediums, but you know, somehow thematically, conceptually, methodologically dealing with similar ideas, or ideas that are imbricated.
Yeah.
Needless to say, it's also like, it's nice to go to, you know, a duo show or a group show and feel like there's something for everybody and have those things, you know, converse in dialogue in that kind of way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you so much. It was really interesting. Just kind of a question both from a curatorial but also from an artistic perspective. The way that you use windows is so different, and I wonder whether drawing on kind of the artistic tradition of windows, in which often they're used by artists who are men from a kind of more voyeuristic perspective. Do you see windows as something, as a symbol in your work that's more interior or exterior, like a way of looking in or looking out?
That's a good question. I think it goes both ways, because we're both trying to show the audience, you know, how we see the world, you know, our gaze, you know, the way. So it's both looking outside, but it's also saying a lot about who we are. And they're all self-portraits in a way too, right? Your paintings are a portrait of your emotional landscape. And
maybe how am I looking outside? Can I say that like that? Yeah. Yeah. Because yes, so it changes, yes? You can switch it, yeah, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's good to switch it.
It's like a portal.
Yeah.
To, I think it's also like a portal to, you know, it's, when I'm speaking about my work, it's a portal to a different time and a different place that you can get through the image, the, through a painting as well, but through a photography. It's like a special, I don't know if you have this expression in English, la ventana mágica. It's like the magic window that you can go through. It's just like disappear in different, into different time frames. It's this magical world that we can traverse.
Oh, I thought that you are thinking more about timeless and spaceless. Spaceless place. I don't know about ideal, but something, you know, higher.
Ideal. I mean, we touched upon psychoanalysis like briefly earlier, and to answer this kind of, thinking again about the window as an interface and your question about interiorization, exteriorization. I mean, always with a work of art, there's this kind of dual process, twinfold process of introjection and projection. You project yourself onto the artwork. You feel comforted or astounded by how it resonates with you.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you're introjecting something that the artist has intended, be it like a tiny inflection on the surface of a canvas or gazing upon a view you never thought you would see in that specific kind of way.
Mm.
And so I think that's why the window felt apt as like, you know, something literal and visual, but also metaphorical, because it really speaks to that relationship between the viewer and the work of art.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, but I think that in every painting, I try to pass my sensitivity, and I think that my senses are very important, you know, in a physical way. So every of you have got your own senses.
Yeah.
And I don't know what you feel. And if we would like to say something about world, if we would like to try to make, you know, that kind of real knowledge, upper knowledge, we have to, you know, compare the sensations of the world. We have to talk with each other through our senses.
Mm.
Yeah. Going back to the portal idea, I think there are portals that join the inner and outer worlds, but also the real and ideal worlds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's, it's like this frame is where everything passes through and we're joined. So yeah, it's an interesting image, the window. Thank you, Imane.
Yeah,
I love the text and I love your thoughts on the window shutter.
Just in the interest of time, I think maybe one more question, and then I think we're going to wrap it up. Oh, Lemna? Okay. All right. I think I'm also just going to pull Sarah to say a couple of words about the gallery before we...
I just was going to offer some wine, but I don't know if we have to say food. I know it's very hot in here. Certainly made me really proud to be working with such amazing women, each in their own right. We've recorded this so you can listen to it again and share it with friends. It'll be available through Alexandra's podcast as a special edition, and we'll be sharing it on our Instagram and our platforms. Feel free to stay and have a glass of wine if you want to, and we'll open the door so you can listen. But thank you for coming.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. And that is it for today on All About Art. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave me a rating or a review, as it helps more people discover the show. Also, feel free to share with your friends, or if you share on social media, tag me and get in touch. Thank you so much for listening.